Can science prove the existence of God? When we talk about the sciences of creation and evolution, ordinarily we are talking about evidence to support creation or evidence to support evolution. Because our origins happened in the past, very rarely can scientists provide evidence that proves this aspect or that aspect of either creation or evolution. Sometimes we can, but these are rare. Hi, this is Jay Oxt of the Institute for Scientific and Biblical Research with another discussion on the topic of science and the Bible, prepared for Wellspring Christian Family Schools. Thanks for joining us today. I do believe that it is appropriate and fully valid to say that the evidence to support creation far exceeds the evidence to support evolution. It should. Romans 1:20 says, "For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." So that is our topic for today. Is his eternal power and Godhood clearly seen? Let's explore that topic. You have probably heard it said, science cannot prove the existence of God. Folks, that is a false statement. The more science progresses, the more cases are discovered that science does prove the existence of a supreme being. There are quite a few examples of this. Time permitting, I will share three with you today. The first one is intelligent design. This is actually a whole movement that started 20 couple years ago. This one is so simple that it is almost laughable once you think about it. In man's everyday life, we see objects and events all the time and instantly recognize whether or not that was natural or designed. It is so common and so simple that we don't even think about it. Some skeptics like to invoke the word complex here, but complexity might be a factor, but not always. Examples. If you're strolling along the beach and see someone's name written in the sand, that is super simple. But without even stopping to evaluate it, you know that it did not occur naturally. Some intelligent being had to have written that. Similarly, at first glance, New Hampshire's Old Man of the Mountain appears to be a man-made sculpture in the rock. This structure is extremely complex. Upon closer examination with binoculars, you will see that it is actually a natural rock formation of multiple rocks with a shape that only looks like an old man from one direction. On the other hand, Mount Rushmore, regardless of what direction you're looking at it from, is obviously sculpted by intelligent beings. The Bible includes examples of intelligent design as well. As we discussed in our previous session, the Bible refers to the creation event, creation of hands, feet, animals, etc., in over 180 passages. I'll give you just a couple of examples. In Psalm chapter 8, David said, "When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars, which thou hast ordained." You see, he could see it. It didn't even need a scientist to figure this out. And it didn't take a telescope. In Psalm 104, verses 12 through 24, we don't know who the psalmist is, but he lists 23 different items created by God. The fowls of the heaven, hills, grass, cattle, herb, man, wine, oil, trees, birds, just to name a few. And then in verse 24, the psalmist proclaims, "In wisdom hast thou made them all." Did he think about the fact that, a bird is designed to fly, a fish is designed to swim? Probably not. It's innate. He looks at him and you go, somebody had to design that. So why is God's creation not so obvious to us anymore? Well, actually, it is just as obvious today as it ever was. But we do not as readily recognize it because of the indoctrination that we are bombarded with each and every day. And that's one of the reasons for this particular program provided by Wellspring Christian Family Schools. However, scientists still see the majesty of God's creation even today. They may not acknowledge it, but they see it. For example, when looking at the intricate design, not the complexity, but the design of the workings of a cell, each cell in your body, you see a whole factory, including machines, motors, highways, transportation systems, energy storage systems, and on and on and on. If you walked into an automobile factory, would you assume that that occurred naturally? Of course not. Somebody designed it. This all works together in the cell because of what? Because of the incredible intelligent design of it. This is not circular reasoning. It is the science, the observations, that shows that it is design, not a belief in a designer. If you would like to know more about the intelligent design movement, check out the movie Unlocking the Mystery of Life by the Discovery Institute. Keep in mind that the ID movement is not necessarily specifically Christian. The purpose of the ID movement is to illustrate, without question, that a supreme being must exist. This video establishes that and then discusses, well, how do we recognize that? We don't know thinking about it, but what are the processes that we do in our head and recognize this so simply? It's a good video. I had an atheist once say after watching that video, well, I guess God does exist. The second one is what I refer to as the second example of proving God's existence is what I refer to as a slam dunk. It pertains to the origin of the universe. Where did it come from? Let's think about the logic here. The universe, there's only two possibilities here. The universe has always been here, or the universe has not always been here, right? There's only two. It's either always been here, or it has not always been here. There's nothing in between. Let's continue. Both of these choices violate fundamental laws of science. The universe, having always been here, that violates the second law of thermodynamics. We often call that entropy. Things always wind down, never up. Things wind down on their own. So you have to change your batteries. You have to wind your watch or whatever. Now, think about it. Always, if the universe has always been here, always is a long time. So who keeps winding it back up? And then the second one, if the universe has not always been here, then it came from nothing. Now, if you believe in Big Bang, you believe that maybe it came from a singularity, but then that just moves the question, where did the singularity come from? Either way, it violates the first law of thermodynamics. It's not just a question that's being thrown out, not just a scientific question that's being thrown at the skeptic. It's a question that they need to answer, and they can't, because both of these ideas that it's either always been here or it hasn't always been here, they both violate fundamental laws of science. The first law of thermodynamics is that nothing can be created or destroyed, so that takes out the idea that that it came from nothing. So let's think about it. There are only two possible mechanisms for the existence of the universe. What are they? Either natural or supernatural. Are there any other possibilities? Either natural or supernatural. That's it. And then back to our two possibilities of the origin. Universe has always been here, or the universe has not always been here. Both of those violate fundamental laws of science. So in both natural possibilities, since they violate the fundamental laws, the only alternative is a supernatural origin. Let's dig a little deeper into this one, because too many people throw an awful lot of rocks at this one. They believe that, a lot of people believe that, well, you can't trust science because new discoveries in science changes everything. Well, that's not true. This argument is way overplayed. It implies that new discoveries replace old discoveries or modify old discoveries. That's not true. Sometimes what we believe has been changed, but that's a different story, and that's not one of our topics today. We're talking about science, not belief systems. So in the realm of science, we have five distinct entities. Let's think about this for a minute. In the realm of science, we have five distinct entities. What are they? Number one, there are ideas, you know, scientific idea. I think this happened or whatever. Number two, there's a hypothesis. Okay, that's an idea that deserves considerable more thought. Number three, we have theories. That's a hypothesis now that this has so much, so intriguing. Let's conduct research and experimentation. Okay, that's what a theory consists of. Then we have facts. That's number four. So these are, from theories have been proven as a proven fact. And then number five is a law. So we have ideas, hypotheses, theories, facts, and laws. These five entities are distinctly different, and they're hardly even taught anymore because science, the classroom, wants you to believe that everything's just a theory. That's not true. Now, sometimes, in some particular areas of science, the boundary between two of these might be a little obscure or a little difficult to identify. That is a situational condition. Okay, and that does not mean that the five distinctions do not exist. And some people might argue, has it passed from one stage to the next? But that's a totally different topic. New scientific discoveries change ideas, hypotheses, and theories. But new discoveries will never change the facts or the fundamental laws of science. The natural explanations of the origin of the universe that we discussed violate fundamental laws. These never change. A fundamental law is one where the facts of all disciplines of science must comply. If the first and second laws of thermodynamics were not always true, then the facts of physics, chemistry, biology, and etc., they would collapse. They wouldn't be true. Or, stated from the other direction, the facts established by physics, chemistry, biology, and etc. are all dependent on the fundamental laws. That's what sets a fundamental law different from just a fact. Fortunately, God has assured us that these laws will always exist. In Colossians chapter 1, verse 16, he tells us that he created all things. In the very next verse, he tells us that by him, they will continue to exist. The Greek word used is for consist or exist is synestano, which is the word that we get, the English word that we get from that is sustain. So by him, he sustains his creation, which includes the facts and laws. So does that mean that those who do not believe in God do not have a response to this, what I call the slam dunk? Well, of course not. They have a response to everything. The question is their response valid? So let's look at their original statement. Science cannot prove the existence of God. Let's look at some of their objections. Sometimes, number one, they will say, well, there could be this or there could be that. And when they refer to that, they're usually thinking of there might be other science laws. That's why we just discussed the five entities here. Well, our slam dunk discussion here never invoked any could-bes of anything. The slam dunk discussed from a scientific perspective of what is, not what could be. So their response need to center around truth, not hypothetical. So just throwing out it could be this, that has no value. Second, also, a could-be response without a plausible explanation? That's sheer mysticism. That's not science at all. The original position statement is a topic of science, not mysticism. Number three, the response of a could-be scenario will always be circular reasoning. These arguments already assume that there is no God. These are not valid arguments. Supporting an argument by a logic that already presupposes the conclusion, that's what we call circular logic, and it has no merit. Most arguments from evolution involve either circular logic or the bullying tactic of presenting the arguments as if, well, everyone knows this. That's not a valid argument either. It has no merit. Number four, there are those that will argue that the facts above already include the conclusion that there is a God. In other words, that we're using circular logic. That's a false statement. Look at the slam dunk again. I did not invoke a God. The scientific laws invoked the God. So claiming that I use circular logic is nothing but a word game. Number five, some folks will argue, well, no scientist believes that the cosmos was created supernaturally. In other words, everything has to have a natural explanation. Well, first of all, that's not even a true statement. That's a very false statement. Thousands of scientists understand the slam dunk scenario and accept it as true. Furthermore, this argument replaces the concept of truth with the concept of belief. That's not what we're talking about. These are two entirely different entities. People believe anything they want. Truth is not established by some sort of pluralistic process. So, watch out for this tactic. A lot of arguments exist that treat belief and truth as one and the same. These are fallacious arguments right from the start because they are based on a false assumption. Their belief could be true, but if their argument treats belief and truth as one and the same, then their argument is wrong. Okay, let's give you a third proof of a God. That third proof is going to be the concept of information and intelligence. The DNA in your body, in every cell in your body, is a code. Any computer programmer can tell you that a code cannot write itself. Code, which is a form of language, requires intelligence. Interesting enough, the code in the DNA required substantially more intelligence to write than any computer code ever. Why do I say that? Well, let's talk about language or code for a moment. When we think about it, language or code, in order for that to be functional, it requires five things. Number one, a need or desire to communicate a message. That's what I'm doing with you. I have a need to communicate this message to you. Number two, a means with which to articulate that message. Well, I'm articulating the message with my mouth when I don't stumble over my own words. Number three, it needs a means with which to transport that message. And generally, if we're face-to-face, that's just the sound waves through the air. To get from me recording this message to you, well, there's a lot of processes that need to happen, right? And that's going to be true in the cell as well. Number five, needs a means with which to receive that message. When we're talking about language, we receive messages from our ears or with sign language. And then lastly, number five, there must be a means with which to act or respond to that message. Otherwise, the message, it has no value. So obviously, mere chemicals cannot develop these processes. As A.E. Wildersmith, in one of his books, would say, why, that would be like believing that the ink on the pages wrote the book. And that is absolutely true. That's a great analogy. That would be like the ink on the pages writing the book. Couldn't happen. Let's talk about the cell and the DNA for a moment. There are only there are only four letters in the DNA, but watch what the designer can do with these four letters. The DNA is a double-sided helix, right? If I unwound that helix, it would look like a long ladder. The rungs of the ladder would be the letters. Let's look at the information on one side of a DNA strand. Pay attention to this. As we read from left to right, we have one message. As you and I read, we always read from left to right. But in the DNA, what if it's read from right to left? That is sometimes a second message. Then look at the opposite side of that DNA strand. Remember, it looks like a ladder, two different sides. The opposite side can be read from left to right, right? That's a third message. And from right to left as well. That's a fourth message. And I'm using the word could be sometimes here. It could be read. That's because it's not always, there's not always four messages in every single section. But there are sections of DNA where a single section has four distinctly different messages, all written in that same segment. So think about that for a minute. From an evolutionary perspective, the claim is that a positive mutation can cause species to advance. Well, how can I have a positive mutation in a complex DNA with multiple messages in it? It might be, even if it could be positive in one of the messages, it would destroy the others in that same segment, right? So much for positive mutations. Maybe very, very simple bacteria, which is, it still isn't simple, but in the simplest of the cells, that can and does happen. But in very complex DNA, positive mutations are practically impossible. That's a different topic. We'll get to that in a different time. So, but that's just the start. We have a possibility of four different messages in a single segment of DNA. But let's ask another question. Where did one message start and stop? Sometimes two messages occupy the same segment of DNA simply because the words have a different start position. Ironically, our word start, that's a good example. If we start with the letter S, the word is start. But if we start with the letter T, the word is tart. Okay, so where the message starts and stops provides even more messages. And we can't do it with our language, but God can and does in the DNA, where it's not just one word, it's an entire message that changes based on where you start to read it. And we're still getting started. Are you getting mind-boggled yet? Sometimes a particular message is used to build a protein. But there's this thing called a methyl radical. If a methyl radical gets attached to a particular message, that same message will be used for something completely different, like building an enzyme. And the DNA does this on demand. Remember in our description of the five things that it takes for communication, the very first one is the need. Okay, so the DNA uses this methyl radical on demand. Do I need this protein or do I need this enzyme? So in other words, this same code builds a protein when that's needed or an enzyme when the enzyme is needed. The intelligence, not the complexity of this code, totally boggles man's mind. The complexity does too, but it's the intelligence that shows there must be a God. It's the intelligence that shows there must be a God. Their intelligence does not come from chemicals. Chemicals have no intelligence and cannot write code. That's like the ink on the page writing a book. Do skeptics, once again, we'll talk about the skeptics, do they have counterarguments? Of course they do. They have arguments against everything. But as previously indicated, they will usually be one of three forms. This code evolved over millions of years. This argument presupposes that evolution is true. Number two, everyone knows that the code evolved. Well, that's the bullying tactic, with the implication, by the way, that you're stupid. And number three, so that's intimidation. And then number three, which is very popular today, is that this code came from a little green alien. Well, this argument merely pushes the problem to a different home. The argument may even include a statement to the effect that the laws of science could be different there. Well, that's nonsense, because the workings of the cell and DNA, they operate under the laws that we have here, not out there. So it's not even that argument doesn't even make any sense. So always be aware of these arguments and these types of arguments. They don't make any sense. Keep in mind that when agenda becomes more important than truth, for that person, truth no longer matters. All of their arguments will make sense to them, but not to anybody else. As Sir Walter Scott said, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive." Well, there you have it. Three different ways where science proves the existence of a supreme being. The first one was intelligent design. We see it all around us. We recognize it. If it weren't for the fact that the evolutionists are in our face all the time, this wouldn't be even an issue. Number two is what I refer to as the slam dunk. The existence of the universe, both of the natural ideas for where it came from without God, violate fundamental laws. The only alternative to natural explanation is a supernatural explanation. And then number three, the code in the DNA. Chemicals cannot write code. That's like saying that the ink on a page wrote the book. Well, we're about out of time, so let's pray. Father, my prayer is that all who listen to these broadcasts will be blessed and that they will see your design in everything around them, everything that you have designed. I pray that the entire family will be blessed and they will see and look for your design in everything around them. And I pray that the faith of each and every person that hears any of these broadcasts will be bolstered and that they would know that they know that you are the great I Am, the creator of each and every one of us and the whole universe. Once again, this is a Bible series brought to you by Wellspring Christian Family Schools. This is Jay Oxt of the Scientific and Biblical Research, the Institute for Scientific and Biblical Research. If you would like to know more about Wellspring Christian Family Schools, feel free to look at wcfs.edu. If you would like to know more about ISBR, feel free to look at isbrministries.org.